When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork. Refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer. Or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in. All with the style you want. And reliability you can count on, so you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances, so much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com. When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork. Refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer. Or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in. All with the style you want. And reliability you can count on, so you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances, so much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
Hey everybody, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. All right, this is going to be another Bee Buzz episode. I'm trying to sprinkle in one per week with the additional episodes and information that we kind of have teed up here for some of you getting prepped for spring. So what we're going to do is we'll release this today on Monday. In a few days, you'll have first-year beekeepers, what you need to have ready before your bees arrive. And we're going to have about four or five of them kind of in a row, just getting you prepped up for the spring here as those spring packages and nukes are preparing for delivery. So we'll have choosing your hive set up, all about frames, feeding systems, swarm prevention, inspection strategies, all that stuff will be coming up here in the next, three, 4 weeks as I can kind of get those cranked out. But today we're doing a bee buzz and we're going to jump right back in. This comes to us from Brian out of Wisconsin. I've got brown streaks on the hive, kind of on the outside. Is this dysentery? When the weather warms up, the bees are going to leave the cluster, break the cluster, leave the hive, and they're going to evacuate their bowels. Now, this is especially notable in places where you have snow on the ground and you get a warm day, because you'll see these just streaks of brown all over the place. You're going to get streaks of some nastiness. They're going to show up outside on the snow. And when you see it, you might think, oh, wow, that does not look good. Well, again, it's a very normal thing for that to occur. And it is just any time that the bees are going to be confined in a space for a long time, they are going to do those, flights called cleansing flights to cleanse the bowel. So that is not a concern by itself. What you do need to pay attention to is you need to be looking in the hive. And again, this is something you may not be able to do at this time of year. It's going to depend on your temperature, the temperature outside. But you want to look inside and see what you see on the inside. If you don't have any of that on the inside, that's great. Clearly just a, cleansing flight, no big deal kind of thing. If you see it on the inside, this can be a real clear indicator of some stress. It could be maybe an issue with the quality of the food that's in the hive. It could be a possible Nosema infection. That is certainly a possibility. There's a balancing act between bees being infected with Nosema and bees being symptomatic of Nosema. So those are kind of where does your hive fall in that situation? But if there's just a little bit inside, and again, sometimes somebody can't hold it, you make a run for the border and just can't make it. But a little bit that might show up inside is not terribly bad. I would definitely remove the frame, try to clean it up. And, on the outside of the hive, I recommend just soap and water. Minimize a lot of chemicals. You just don't want to do that. If it is still cold, like if they have their cleansing flight and they come back to the hive and then it's cooler outside, that might be a time where you can actually clean it up. And if you wanted to, after the soapy water wipe down, if you wanted to do just for some additional cleansing, you could do like a 10-to-1 bleach mix, just a little bit of bleach with some water and wipe down the exterior of that. But really just a good dish soap, like Dawn. I use Dawn or one of those types of dish soaps for a lot of things, just cleaning hive components. And that seems to do a pretty good job. Just clean the outside up. The bees are pretty hygienic already, just with propolizing things and covering things up that could be vectors of infection. But, you know, don't leave chunks of things out there that might get in the way. If it is on a frame, do the same thing, right? Scrape it off, just wipe it off, and you can certainly return that. Now, if it is Nosema, it doesn't survive super well in really high or really low temperatures. So that's something to kind of consider. If you take it out for a while, you can put that frame in the freezer and you can reduce the presence of the spore. Having frames outside, you know, over winter can certainly get them cold enough where it can kill Nosema. That's kind of a whole separate side discussion. But if you want to read more, go to scientificbeekeeping.com. Randy Oliver has done a tremendous job in researching and documenting this. He's forgotten more about this than I can ever know. And it's really a great resource. So I definitely recommend checking that out. I'm very blessed for whatever reason. I don't have a lot of Nosema issues. It doesn't show up very often. I don't have to fight that fight. Every time it shows up, I always go back and go, okay, what did Randy say about this? So definitely worth checking out. Okay, next is Tyler out of Ohio. Bees are dragging out larvae. Is this a problem? So there can be a number of reasons why you might see this. On the surface, at a basic level, I would say, well, you know, bees that are hygienic, when there is a problem, they recognize the problem, hopefully, and they say this larvae is not going to develop properly, or it is injured, infected, sick, something is wrong with it, and they're going to remove it. So the fact that a colony is being hygienic and removing things that are not able to develop for some reason, that's good. That's a good sign to me. Now, of course, you want to dig down and peel back the onion a little bit and discover what the source or the cause was of that death. If it's just a couple, I don't even think twice about it. Hygienic behavior, let's move on. If there's a whole lot, I want to do a little more digging on that. There is a possibility, particularly at this time of year, where you may have a cluster that is it's reducing in size as winter bees are beginning to age off. The replacement spring bees have not yet emerged as full functional workers to replace everybody and start the spring. And there's that kind of gap in the middle where sometimes, you have some larvae on the edges and the periphery of the cluster where they unfortunately get too cold, and that chilled brood will die and has to be evacuated from the cell and discarded outside. So if you have a little bit, again, hygienic behavior, nothing to be concerned about. If you have a whole lot, you want to do some digging and see if you can determine exactly what's going on with it. Generally, as the season begins to ramp up, and you should see that go away. If it's happening all the time, you definitely want to do some more digging. Look at the frames. Look at if there is actual evidence of disease within the brood pattern itself. That's another area where you're going to have to do some digging. I know that's kind of a broad answer. I hope that covers it. Definitely let me know if it does not. Okay, Eric out of Nebraska. Should I reverse brood boxes now? If you are a brood box reverser, I would say that now would be probably okay to do that if the bees are active, they're flying, and it is a time when the temperatures are probably in that. God, why can I? I need a conversion chart that just sits like right next to my monitor. So as I'm talking, I can just look at it. I would say really probably not reversing things until it's maybe say 60 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. And maybe is that like 15, 18, 20, somewhere in there, probably around 20 Celsius, I guess, 18 to 20 Celsius. You don't have to. Okay. And this is something I want to just do a quick pause here. Every time you have a question, every time you think of something, you're like, I wonder if, or I wonder how, or if I should, I would always say, if the bees were in a cavity in a tree right now, what would they do? And that's a great way to answer the questions. Now, there are some things where it's like, that's not exactly the same thing. But for a lot of situations and things, you can just focus on what's in the tree. So if you have, let's just say you have a double deep configuration, medium on top, spring rolls around and they're starting to lay up in that top deep because maybe you have a queen excluder on, or maybe you've re-added your queen excluder, whatever the case might be. They're just going to draw and work their way down. That's what that queen is going to do. And that's what they do in the tree. No problem there. What I've kind of started doing with this is just keeping an eye on it. I start really in the fall because quite often they'll be working their way up in the fall as they're sucking honey away and figuring out where they want everything to be. I've had several seasons where the bottom deep is completely empty and I get rid of that. There are a lot of beekeepers who they want to overwinter in a single deep or a deep with a medium. I know that when I first was starting out, it was really hard to understand the dynamic and the link between, you know, how much honey is enough honey, how cold is too cold. And then understanding that, you know, when you have a cooler winter, sometimes that's even better than a warmer winter. I used to think, oh, cool, it's a little bit warmer here. And I saw the bees flying in the winter, and that's kind of neat to see them out. Well, that's actually kind of worse, right? You kind of would rather have them be cooler and stay in the hive than to be expending energy out looking for resources when there's nothing there to be found. But as it relates to the reversal of the brood boxes, it almost becomes like a personal preference thing. If you prefer to do that and you would rather them be at the bottom and be working their way back up again, you can. I would definitely recommend removing boxes that aren't in use and re-adding. But at this time of year, if you've got all the comb and it's strong and they're using the space and they made it through the winter, I would just keep the entrance down to, you know, keep the entrance small until things warm up. And as it warms up and the activity increases significantly, open it back up again. It's just a personal preference thing. The one thing you always have to remember whenever opening the hive is that brood needs to be really warm. And when you open things up and they get cold, it really puts them at risk. So you just want to minimize the amount of time that you have them exposed to lower temperatures. All right, Daniel out of Tennessee, the hive is heavy. And by the way, if you didn't catch the previous episodes or whatever, I'm not reading the whole emails. I'm taking the highlight nuggets out so people don't just send me an email that says hive heavy but low activity. It's actually a full email that I've condensed down. So Daniel in Tennessee says, the hive is heavy, but activity is low. Is this normal? So a good heavy hive at this time of year is great. That gives me an indication that they have overwintered with sufficient resources and potentially a decent amount of surplus. I like that. The lower activity is going to be a little bit subjective. If it is still a little bit cool, sometimes you'll see a few bees out and not that many, while the others are still inside, you know, tending to brood or doing other activities. So they may be warm enough to break the cluster, but not a lot of them are leaving the hive yet. So it's really going to be depending on the temperature. If you have a nice warm day and they're not very active, that's probably a cause for concern. So on that warm day and you're not seeing as much activity as you think should be, you know, present, go ahead and open the hive up. Take a look inside, see what you can see. I mean, there are colonies that die in the winter with multiple frames, numerous frames of honey. So it is kind of possible that they may be running out of bees. So maybe the honey outlasted the bees. It's kind of unfortunate in a situation like that because we can always add more honey or more sugar syrup or more emergency feed of some type, but we can't just add more bees. Well, at least not without getting a package of bees or spending some money. So sort of normal, but you need to do a little more digging. Okay, Matt out of Arkansas, should I feed one-to-one syrup to stimulate buildup? Okay, so just to answer the question as it is, as a standalone kind of item, if you feed one-to-one sugar syrup, it will stimulate the production of brood and the drawing of comb. Now, one thing that I think is really, really critically important to consider and understand as a new beekeeper is there are a lot of really bright guys and gals on YouTube who are doing videos on beekeeping, showing you how to do this, how to do that. This is how we have our overwintering setup, our spring setup. This is what we're feeding them in the spring to ramp things up. And I think that they do, most of them do a really good job of explaining to you what they're doing. I think it's very important to understand, though, in addition to that explanation, you need to make sure that you recognize a lot of them are saying, hey, we have 100 colonies here, and we're trying to get to 300 this year, and we're going to be selling 150 nukes or whatever it might be. Or they may say, hey, I've got 50 now, we're splitting all of them to 100, and then we're sending them all to go do some pollination work. There's a lot of things that are going on with the, you know, with these folks that are outside of what a hobbyist beekeeper needs to be concerned about, needs to be worried about, and needs to be thinking about. When in doubt, look to what the bees are doing in nature. And I love this, that I have this swarm of bees in the tree, like right outside my house. Like literally, I walk out my house and the ones who went past the swarm trap are up there and they're flying around. They've been really active lately. I'm sure they're probably going to swarm this year. I'm going to try and catch them. So that should be kind of fun, but they're not getting supplemental fed. Nobody's in there doing anything special for them. They didn't get any Varroa treatment in the fall last year. They seem to be doing okay, right? So it's like, and it's so crazy because, you know, we have this mindset where we've been sort of taught that like there's all these things that we got to do as a beekeeper. I've seen people who are very uninvolved, not because they don't love their bees. They're just, they've got a lot going on. And they've asked me like, hey man, what do you think? Like I'm really busy. I got a lot of stuff going on at work. I travel a lot. Like, but I just love having the bees there. And I said, look, if you give them a decent amount of space and you're treating for varroa, like if you just make your life's work with your bees, treating them for varroa and keeping them pest free, you know, making sure if you see hive beetle, put some traps out, things like that. But if you just kind of take care of those basic things, right? Watch out for pests and disease. You can kind of leave them alone. You can be a little bit hands off. You don't really want them to swarm on you, but if they do, then they do. And you just keep on taking care of what's left behind. Now, again, I'm not trying to say, hey, I encourage you to let your bees swarm. What I'm saying is that you don't have to be intervening all the time, trying to solve every problem. They're pretty good at solving problems. Now, getting back to you about when you should or should not feed. Remember that sugar syrup is the kind of thing that they need to be able to bring it in and consume it and kind of metabolize it and be able to store. Well, it's not necessarily metabolized. They're bringing in, they're storing, they're adding enzymes, they're passing it to other bees. It's being, you know, stored away into the cells, and then it gets cured, turns into honey, and gets capped. Now, there's a lot, of course, that goes immediately, which is really important at this time of year, goes immediately to the cells that are in and around the brood space that is used immediately to mix with pollen, create royal jelly, and start stimulating that brood production. That's where it really comes in handy right now. This really isn't storage time of year as much as it is brood ramp up. So having that type of a one-to-one syrup mix is fine. Nothing wrong with that. But do they need that? A lot of times people will try to feed in the spring and they say, I don't know what's going on. They're not taking any of the feed up. This is just, I'm scared because I'm concerned for them. But they're flying. And if they're flying and they're finding things in nature that they prefer, they're not going to want your sugar syrup. They're going to want whatever they find out in the environment. So if they're doing that, if you're giving them feed and they aren't taking it up, but you still see a nice little buildup, I wouldn't worry about that. The challenge that you have, if you say, I'm going to feed them because this is what I think is best, is they are much more in tune to the environment and the environmental conditions and the weather and all those things than we are. Yes, we do have the ability to look at a long range weather forecast and realize that there's a week of, you know, 20 Fahrenheit, minus 8 Celsius, whatever it is. You know, we can see that, and they don't know what that future is going to look like, but they're going to figure it out, or at least they're going to give it a pretty good shot. If you start stimulating them too early, you actually can stimulate them very early under the right conditions and be able to adapt and pivot with other interventions later if conditions change. Lots of beekeepers don't fully understand all of the options that are available to them. So you just start pumping them through, you know, a bunch of sugar syrup, and all of a sudden they're ramping up brood like crazy. And then you get 4 or 5 days of really, really cold, you know, cold temps overnight or for the whole day even. And you start having brood die. And you're like, well, I don't understand. I saw so-and-so on YouTube do it and it worked for them. Well, they also didn't do the follow-up video. So when in doubt, let the bees do what's kind of natural for them. And again, if you feel like there's, you know, you've actually had the opportunity to do an inspection and it's warm enough and you can see in there that, oh man, they are really, really low on things. If they're really low and your temps are decently warm, you know, go ahead and put, you know, a frame feeder in. Just make sure that you're checking it almost probably like every other day. That's where I like my frame feeders to be high. We have a whole episode coming up here in about a week or two talking all about feeding and feeding systems. But I like to keep my feeders up a little bit high. That way I can just pop the top and get into them pretty easy without having to tear a bunch of boxes apart.
This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.
So we got one from Jason in Kentucky here. bees are clustered near the entrance. Is this normal? Now, for all of you, I messaged back on this one and there was some more subsequent dialogue on this. But when I heard that, I thought that was kind of unusual, right? Because bees are going to cluster, you know, typically towards the center of whatever the cavity might be. And of course, they will work up and down and laterally as they consume resources moving up. But typically, if it's still cold out or cooler and they're clustered, they're going to be up high. They're going to be, you know, much higher up as they're consuming resources, not so much down near the bottom. What I'm wondering is, or what I was wondering was like, hey, talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you're seeing or what was going on. And what it turned out was that it was a slightly warmer day and there were a lot of bees down near the entrance. And he was concerned that they were clustering down that low. I think what was actually going on is they had a little bit of a warmer day. They were just trying to, you know, figure out if they were going to leave or not. They were probably pulling things out, doing some cleanup, and there was a lot of activity taking place. So I would say they probably were not clustering at the entrance, but they were probably just removing and discarding items, and there just happened to be several of them there. So I don't think that if you were to see a cluster of bees, now there is a different type of thing you may see, which is lending itself more towards like the bearding side of things. So if you see a bunch of bees coming out of the entrance and they are starting to hang out around that area, then it may be, of course, it's a little bit warm and they're just trying to get out, you know, to you know, allow for a little more cooling inside the hive. A little less common at this time of year, but a good friend of ours in the Discord room, Jay out there in Indiana, sent some pictures the other day. He had some thunderstorms coming in and his bees were bearding all over the place. I mean, they were just all over the outside of the hive. I was like, man, you got to split that thing because that population is just exploding over there. It was really exciting to see. He had his hive wrapped up and insulated, and it was really kind of cool to see just how strong, especially with some of the harsh conditions that you folks get out there in the Midwest, but just how strong that colony overwintered, and just to see how massive, you know, the population is. So that's going to be a really good hive to see how that goes forward. But anyway, again, you know, bees are going to be clustering around brood, usually towards the middle. You know, they're not going to be really by the entrance. So you're probably seeing some other activity with that. Okay, Scott out in Alberta, should I add a pollen patty below freezing if temps are below freezing? So, of course, remember, whatever the temperature is outside, the bees are going to be maintaining a temperature considerably warmer on the inside. I would not recommend, if you're saying, you know, to add a pollen patty when the temps outside are below freezing, I would really avoid that. Unless you have some kind of an indicator that tells you that they are definitely starving, I would not be opening the hive if I don't have to. Now, let's say that you had a nice warm day on Saturday and you just thought, oh my gosh, this is terrible. They are almost out of everything and it's going to be cold again next week. If you had to just open the top and kind of slap a patty up top and close it back really quickly, I would rather run the risk of a little bit of cool air coming in quickly and briefly to get them some feed than to just say, oh, well, I'll wait 5 or 6 days until it gets, you know, 5 or 10 or 15 degrees warmer. But again, if it's really, really cold like that and they're probably raising a little bit of brood right now, there's a little bit of risk associated with it. So whatever you do, just be really fast and keep in mind that the balance of what you're looking at too, right? If you're giving, you know, pollen is definitely going to a pollen patty or a pollen heavy patty is definitely going to be stimulating spring brood. That's not the end of the world as long as they've got the resources to support it. But you can also get something that's more of a carb, you know, carb or kind of a balance. You know, at this time of year, a good balanced or protein heavy type patty would probably be better. If you're making your own, of course, you can control how much of those you put in there. You just don't want excessive protein in the gut if you have, you know, long periods of confinement. It can cause a lot of discomfort, I would say, and a little bit more urgency to do those cleansing flights we talked about earlier. Okay, we got Aaron out of South Carolina. A few bees have deformed wings. Is this varroa? So there is a virus called deformed wing virus, and I am not aware of a transmission vector to honeybees for deformed wing virus other than varroa. I'm sure it is certainly possible. I haven't done the research to say one way or another, but here's what I can tell you. If you have deformed wings in your bees, there is a pretty good possibility that that came from the varroa mite. So as I've said many times before, I look at varroa mites as kind of like the HIV of the honeybee world. It's not the mite itself that's killing the bees. It's all of the secondary illnesses and disease that they carry, deformed wing virus being one of them. So if you are seeing this, you know, sometimes too, it's possible that you may see it in just a couple, you know, a couple of bees. And if it just shows up in a couple, you know, it's not really the end of the world. But you definitely want to be mindful. When you see that, you've got to think, okay, maybe I didn't get my treatment just right. Maybe I didn't do a good sampling. Maybe I didn't do a sampling at all after I did a treatment. You want to get really, really aggressive. Like, this is the time of year now where varroa is ramping up big time. As the bees are ramping up, so is varroa. Because remember, varroa is reproducing in the brood space. They're going to get underneath of the cell before it's capped, and they're going to develop inside the cell. They love that drone brood because it gets them an extra 3 days of development time for them to continue, you know, ramping up, you know, their population of varroa mites. So get on top of that as early as you can. And I would say if you had a situation where you had deformed wing virus, you know, and you had it, it was pretty pervasive throughout your hive, and your mite numbers, now remember, a lot of people will say, oh yeah, it was August and my mites were zero. Like, I had none going into the winter. I have no idea how they died. If you did your first treatment in like August or September for the year, you can have a zero mite count. And you can do that in August. You can check them again in October. Oh, still zero. This is great. And they can be deathly ill and dying. They are already infected. The, you know, the viral load on them is just through the roof because they weren't treated and gotten under control in the spring. So you really want to be aggressive with them now and get after it sooner than later. Because again, you know, I say all this stuff, man, and I'm picking on myself. Every time I say it, I'm like poking myself in the head because I was so just nonchalant about this. I was like, oh, it's no big deal. I got the mite numbers where they need to be. And then I would still have, you know, the black shiny bees. But you got like that acute bee paralysis virus or Israeli acute paralysis virus. You know, all those things are going to be, you know, incredibly disruptive to your bees and their longevity. All right, we got Luke out of Missouri. Should I clean out the bottom board now? I don't really do that quite this early. Everything really comes down to temperature where you are. So, you know, you're in Missouri, so you still have a few more good solid weeks of some potential cold. I wouldn't be surprised if you guys catch like a mid-April, you know, snowstorm or something. I would not be worrying about that now. Now, if you happen to like look in there, if you were looking in the front of the hive and you shined a flashlight in there and you just saw a ton of debris and it was really gross, yeah, you might want to intervene a little bit on that one. But normally I don't worry about this until I'm kind of getting into that first really deep dive kind of inspection. And to be transparent here, I really don't usually do anything with it until I would swap out to a spring or to a screened bottom board. So when I used to switch back and forth between screened and solid bottom boards, I would usually do that somewhere in like the mid-May timeframe. That way I can just make the swap and then I clean the bottom board that's solid, put it off the side, and it's done. So it all comes down to your temperatures. If it's really nice out and you're tearing the hive down anyway for some other reason, maybe you're reversing your brood boxes. Maybe you just want to get that first really detailed inspection. Maybe you realize that there's an entire deep sitting there they're not using at all and you want to kind of consolidate a little bit. Whatever makes the most sense for your given scenario, but I wouldn't be overly worried about it unless you see something that looks problematic. All right, we got Josh out of Georgia. Can a wheat colony now explode later? Absolutely. There are different genetics and races and different bees all over that will sometimes cluster with just a minimal amount of bees, and they're able to maintain a good temperature with few resources, and then they just explode and then they turn around and swarm. I mean, things happen really, really quickly in the springtime. And again, the spring is where it kind of creeps up on you a little bit. This is why so many people get caught on swarms, like not caught catching swarms, but they get themselves in trouble because there's a couple of warm days. The bees are like, cool, I got some fresh, you know, tree pollen or whatever it is coming in. They start ramping up brood. By the time we get to where the weather is nice, you know, nice for people, and we're starting to go outside with shorts and things, they're swarming. And like, I know for a fact right now, we've had warm weather here for about the past week. I've actually had the heat off, windows open. And of course, we're turning it back on, I think, tonight. I think we're getting ready to go through a little bit of a cool spell. But that's exactly what's going to happen. We have this nice warm weather, And then we're going to have a few days of a cold spell. And like the first day or two, it gets warm again. Boom, they're going to start swarming. So we're definitely going to be seeing swarms at my house by, I would say, March 20th timeframe, maybe something like that. 2022, 2025. Definitely going to start seeing some swarm activity early. So yes, they can explode very quickly. But don't just assume that, well, it's a really, really small cluster, but it'll all work out. If you need to intervene and provide some supplemental feed, or you need to do something, don't be afraid to do so. You can always give them something that they decide they don't want. And that's better than, you know, not giving them anything at all. And again, this goes back to what your management strategy is. My strategy is different than a lot of other people's. But I will definitely feed in a spring. You have a colony that made it to March and they need supplemental feed for some reason. Yeah, absolutely. Give them a little bit of feed. All right, Derek out of Colorado. When should I start thinking about swarm management? Let's see. This is March 12th. February 10th, something like that. I don't know. I would be thinking about swarm management very, very early. I think we're going to do, I'm trying to look at what episode number that I have tentatively giving it here. Oh, that's a wrong number. Okay, yeah, swarm trapping we have in there. Swarm prevention basics. I have that tentatively listed around episode 197. So we're going to cover that in a bit more detail. But for me, honestly, as soon as it's spring and as soon as it starts getting warm and the bees are flying regularly, I'm thinking about swarm management immediately. I am pulling frames at every inspection. I am now on a weekly inspection kind of check as long as the weather supports it, as long as the temperatures outside support it. I'm beginning to get into that weekly inspection mode. I'm looking for queen cups, queen cells. If I see a cup, is there anything in the cup? If you need to, I have a video I did on YouTube where I just talked about a method that I use to take notes. It's a cheap, like $10 or $15 mic. I put it on. I do my inspections verbally. I say, I'm over here in hive number 15. I'm looking at this, 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 and this. I see this, I see this, I see that. I then take it, I transcribe it into a, I go online, I transcribe it into a text file, give it to ChatGPT, it spits it out into a document that I can save, and then I get to keep all of my hive notes in one place. It's really easy to track that information, and I definitely recommend, you know, tracking everything somehow yourself, because it's really, really huge for being able to look at it and say, okay, last time I did an inspection. In fact, you don't even have to do that. You could export what I just gave you after like 15 inspections, and then literally just upload the PDF to ChatGPT and say, I got to go do an inspection today on my hives. Which ones had queen cups last time I did an inspection? It'll come back and be like, hives number 6, 8, and 14 had queen cups. And then you can say, great, on 6, 8, and 14, where were they? And it'll say, on hive 6, it was on frame 3. It can literally tell you whatever you want to do. Now, again, if you're technology averse, I certainly understand that. Pen and paper, take some notes. A lot of people will slap a piece of like duct tape on top of the hive and carry a Sharpie with them, and they just use abbreviations. So you might put like QC3. You know, you might put like a little date on there and put QC3. Oh, queen cup on frame 3. Or it could be queen cell. I mean, I would say that it's the same thing. If you leave it alone, that queen cup will become a queen cell. Find a system that works for you, that you like, that makes you happy, and just run with it. All right, I got another one here from Caleb out in Oklahoma. Got a lot of burr comb kind of early. Should I scrape that, or, you know, what do you recommend? I recommend to always just remove burr comb. You pull a comb, you pull a frame out when you're doing full inspections, scrape that off. You don't have to go crazy with it, but scrape off things that are obviously there. Particularly, this becomes an issue if you have like a double deep configuration. Because in the spring, they can run out of space really quickly. And when they do, they start trying to connect the upper and lower deep. They're like, hey, wait a minute. We have a space in between this area. Let's go ahead and lay this up. And they will. And they'll go through and they'll put drone brood down there, whatever else they want to put. And then you go to open the, you know, open everything up during an inspection. And then now you're pulling up on a frame and you're like literally lifting the stuff up behind it or underneath of it. This is kind of a little trick I'm going to demonstrate for you guys in a video once I have it out here to show you. But if you have a double deep like that, what I've done before is I break the propolis seal on the sides, lift up a little bit just so I know it's moving, and then I do a full rotation horizontally, just rotate it about 90 degrees. Just do a 90-degree rotation, and that breaks all of that stuff free. Now, they're not going to be happy. Anytime that they've drawn comb and they've got eggs in there and they're growing, you know, young, whether it's worker or drone brood, they don't care. They're not going to be super pleased that you just tore all that apart. but you don't want that connective comb between those two areas. So I just lightly scrape it off. I do try to save it if possible, because you can melt it down later and use it for, you know, painting your frames or repurpose it in some kind of a way, because it is good new comb. But, you know, just don't spend too much time with it. All right, we got Marcus out of Georgia. We have eggs, but no capped brood yet. Is that good? Well, that's just the beginning. That's just the beginning step. You're going to see eggs first. No problem, right? Queen's obviously laying. She's laying, and maybe it's fairly recently that they've started to get that nectar flow kicking in, which is stimulating her to do her thing. So that looks pretty normal. Just give it a few more days. Your next inspection, you should see capped brood all over the place. Grant out of Illinois, the hive is heavier on one side. Is this an issue? Like, what does that mean? You know, as the cluster and as the bees are consuming resources and they're moving around, you know, there's honey all across the entire, let's just say you had a deep and a medium, and the whole medium was completely loaded out. If they consumed everything on one side and kind of worked their way over, you know, you could still have, particularly if you noticed there was honey on one side, then of course, obviously that one side might be heavier. I'm not worried about it at all. I'm still focusing on the basics. Are the bees moving on warm days? Are they flying? Are they, you know, are cleansing flights happening? Do you see pollen coming back when you do your inspections? Is there still a little bit of honey in reserve on the sides somewhere? Are you seeing brood starting to be developed? Does the brood pattern look good? Do they have access to pollen and nectar near the brood? Is there a good pool of royal jelly inside the cell? We'll talk about all of this later. Don't worry if this is new. So yeah, that's what I'm looking at. A little bit heavier on one side. I don't really care. All right, winter remove, winter wraps. Well, Claire out of the UK. So with winter wrapping, it's interesting because a lot of people are starting to find that just leaving their colonies wrapped all year provides a certain level of insulation that, again, is more comparable to what you would see in a tree cavity. So some people are starting to wrap them year round. What I'm going to do this year, and everything comes down to time, and time is always getting away from me, and you mix that in with a few other issues that happen from time to time, and it's just really hard to get everything done. But if I have it my way, I will have some colonies that I am monitoring, and then in like July or August, I'll go ahead and put the wrap back on and then put some of the monitoring, you know, software back in place and see what I see. See what I can gather from the inside of the hive. Does that extra insulation also help them to maintain things a little bit better on the inside? That part I don't really know. But a lot of people are saying, particularly even in the South here in the US, that they're keeping some of that on. And this is not from me saying this, but when we had Peg on from Hive Hugger, she was saying that she's got some folks down there that are saying that in the South, their hives are even cooler when they've kept their insulation on. For me, I don't wrap, like I don't do the full wrap at, you know, at my house with my colonies. However, I am going to absolutely be using it moving forward because I think that while my bees have done a pretty good job of surviving without it, I feel like a Hive Hugger solution, or whether you're making your own insulative solution or whatever it might be, I think having that makes them more efficient. So maybe, you know, let's say I've got 50 pounds of honey and they make it every year with 8 to 10 pounds left over. What if I can do that with them having 25 or 30 pounds left over? So if there's more left over from them, that's more for me. So I wouldn't race to remove it. But, you know, I'd probably say you're looking at, you know, maybe in the May timeframe when the temps start getting consistently warmer and it's not as cool at night, you know, feel free to take it off when you see, you know, some warmer temps. We got Joel out of Texas. Equalize colonies early. I think he's a proponent of the equalizing, or has been told that equalizing colonies should be done. I don't equalize colonies. I think I mentioned that on a previous episode. I think it's a bad practice, because I have really strong, good, you know, productive colonies that have great genetics, and I want them to thrive. I want to use them for my breeder queens. I want to use their queens to make more queens that are productive like they are. So, you know, propping up bad genetics makes absolutely no sense to me. I don't understand this. I won't do it. And again, I've been wrong many times in the beekeeping world. There have been things that have come up where I've taken a position and I've gone back and said, hey, you know what? I've done some research and I was wrong. And this is one that I feel really, really comfortable with. I am not propping up bad genetics. Now, There are always scenarios where certain things might make sense. I have some really hugely productive colonies, and I have, let's say it's a 50-50 split. Half of them are just amazing, killing it, great genetics. The other half are really weak and just barely getting by. And I've got to go do a pollination contract, and I've got to have 100 colonies. Okay, well, you know what? Prop up the weaker ones, reduce that urge and tendency to swarm in the really strong ones, and now you've got 100 colonies that can go into this pollination contract with some strength. Okay, I can see where you may want to do that. Me, Jeff, the guy at home keeping some bees recreationally and just trying to enjoy them, that's just not something I'm going to do. I don't subscribe to that. Can't get on board. All right, we're going to do the last one for today. We've got Andrew out of Michigan. How do I know if my queen failed over the winter? Well, you're going to see probably a lack of general activity. You're not going to see any new eggs. You know, there's the obvious things where, like, you know, you look in there, you obviously can't find her. You're not seeing the activity level that you want to see. You may start seeing. So the presence of queen pheromones suppresses the development of the ovaries in worker honeybees. Because remember, worker honeybees could have been queens if they were put into a cell and they were fed royal jelly the entire time that they were in their development. They would have become queen bees. But because they didn't get that same mixture through the entire duration of their early development, they became workers. If that queen pheromone is absent, the workers, some of the workers can develop their ovaries. And when they do, they will get what's called a laying worker condition. You can have more than one laying worker, and then you end up with them just laying unfertilized eggs, which of course then become drone. It's just drone brood, basically. So if you are seeing random spotty drone brood for any reason, and you're seeing multiple eggs per cell, and a general like lethargy to the hive, they're just not energized and motivated to do anything, can't find the queen, no eggs and new developing larvae in a nice pretty brood pattern on the brood frames, all of those are going to be pretty good indicators of a problem. All right, that's going to do it for today's Bee Buzz, and I will be getting out the first year beekeepers, you know, what you need to have ready before your bees get here. That'll come out on Monday. And take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you. And there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
Looking for skincare that actually delivers transformative results? UBeauty combines breakthrough science with simplicity. The multitasking resurfacing compound replaces multiple steps with one powerful yet balanced formula designed to visibly brighten, smooth, and even skin while helping minimize the look of pores, dark spots, and fine lines. And it's gentle enough for sensitive skin. Add their super hydrator for up to 48 hours of multi-level hydration that leaves skin looking plump, dewy, and glowing. Streamline your routine and see the difference for yourself. Shop now at ubeauty.com.